Kentuckery. The Maine outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife and the woods are just outside your way. So get outside and find it in the Maine outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Hey, thank you. And many of you don't know, but I am a connoisseur of fish chowder. And I'm here to tell you that the Coach House and Brewer has ramped up their fish chowder, and it's really outstanding. So you might want to keep that.
Seafood
chowder. It's only, what, Sunday night and Friday night. But they have a gangbuster seafood chowder. Just thought you might like to know that. Anyway, welcome to Maine Outdoors. It's great to have you here. As you know, if you're listening to the show regularly, we are Maine's longest-running outdoor talk radio program. You're listening to us on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network. And we have a state-free, toll-wide telephone number that you can dial if you'd like to be on our show. And we always encourage you to do so. And the number, Diane, is?
1-800-966-1039. 1039.
That's right. And it's the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, and 95.1 down there in Rockland. And again, welcome to our show. I would venture to say this may be one of the more outstanding programs of the year, if not the decade. I'm really excited about our guest tonight. I'm a passionate hunter, and he's a lot more passionate than I am about hunting, and I'm just excited to have him here, and I'll introduce him right after I do the crew. The engineer, the chief engineer, is that good-looking guy from Orrington, the Raspberry Baron, Mr. Scotty Bates.
Yes, good evening, Paul. Nice showery one out there this evening.
Yeah, we got these fronts all around us.
Right.
Surrounded by electricity.
Glad I'm not flying tonight.
You bet. Not a good time to be up in the air. And with him, to his immediate right, is the sage, a sweetheart of Grand Lake Stream, back fresh from a fishing trip up in Quebec, Norm Plord.
Good evening. I didn't get those showers, by the way, at home. I wish I would have.
Yeah.
The garden could use it.
Oh, yeah, gardens could use it. Anyway, nice to have you guys here. And, oh, by the way, our co-host tonight is not Bob Lehman. Bob's playing hooky down at Grand Lake Stream. But in his place is my wife of 50-some years.
Five.
And 50, that long. She's kind of a reluctant co-host tonight, but I kind of pressured her into it. And I know you love having her on the air. She's a bright lady, and she'll do a great job. And it's nice to have you here as our co-host, Diane Reynolds.
Thank you.
You bet. Okay, our guest tonight, we're really excited about it. His name is Ken Winters. He's a graduate of the University of Maine, and he probably is Maine's most renowned world big game hunter, and he has a book out, which is outstanding, and we're going to talk about his adventures. Ken, nice to have you on our show.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here and appreciate the opportunity.
You bet, and I've read all of your book. It's called Chasing High Adventure, mm-hmm. and it reports on 5 near-death experiences hunting those big game animals. Now, there's a hunting of big game, and then there's the hunting of dangerous big game.
Mm-hmm,
and
exactly.
You've done both, but you have a preference for the latter.
I do indeed. Yeah.
We're going to talk about it in just a few minutes. Again, nice to have you here. And you folks at home, listen carefully to what this man has to say, because he truly does have some great, exciting stories to share with you tonight. We're going to talk about those. And he welcomes your input, your questions, any comments you might have at 1-800-966-1039. Right now, though, it's time for Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. I want to remind you, the July issue of the Journal just hit the streets, and we have a special cover story this month, and particularly if you're a tourist just coming into Maine and you're looking for some moose viewing hotspots. This paper is going to be covering the entire state of Maine. We've interviewed all the biologists who will tell you where the best places are to view the moose during the summer months. So check it out in the Northwood Sporting Journal. It's available at your newsstands. If you'd like to get a 12-month subscription, you can do so by calling lovely Alicia at 732 334-880 during the week. Okay, just a couple of quick items here on the Outdoor Digest. The moose drawing took place, and I personally know somebody quite well who drew a cow permit, and yes. You guys don't even know that yet.
Oh, yes, I know that.
Oh, you did know that?
Yeah, I picked right up on that.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Okay. Anyway, Diane got her second moose permit in her life. Congratulations, my dear.
Thank you. I'm thrilled.
You're excited, right? Yeah. What zone did you get?
I think it's 2.
Zone 2, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, up there.
That's, what area is that? What area is
that? That's your stomping ground.
Oh, it is.
West of Portage, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're going to go up there and scout around in August and check it all out. Anyway, that's exciting. And if you were lucky enough to get a moose permit, congratulations to you. We hope you plan well and have a great fall moose hunting season. Ken, did you ever get a moose permit?
I have. I've had a couple of them here.
In Maine, have
in
you?
Maine,
Yeah.
I shot a couple of moose in British Columbia.
Have you really?
And then a couple in Maine.
Yeah. Great eating, aren't they, huh?
Wonderful. We try to make a safari out of it.
It's
a family event.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what we're going to do, I think. Okay, congratulations to the folks with the Moose Lottery recipients. Just a couple of quick things from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We want to congratulate a man we've had on our program many times. Lee Cantor, Maine's moose biologist, was singled out by the North American Moose Conference last week and received the Distinguished Moose Biologist Award, which is quite a thing. And he was cited for having the most progressive and scientific moose management program in the entire United States. So tip of the hat, kudos to Lee Cantor for doing a great job and making Maine proud of our moose biologists. One other thing, also, the Fish and Wildlife Department is accepting nominations this month for the Outdoor Lifetime Achievement Award for 2019. If you know somebody who's made a great contribution to hunting, trapping, and fishing in Maine, somebody who's been at it for at least 40 years, who's been a mentor and a teacher to other folks in outdoor activities, and you'd like to nominate them, we suggest you call the Fish and Wildlife Department during the week to get more info at 287-8000. That's 287-8000. And even though Mr. Lehman is not on board tonight, we can't dispense with his favorite music, can
we? Right.
Right. Now you know what to do here, Diane, right?
I'm the big boss Bass.
Yeah.
And you work for me.
Yeah.
You guys are good. Come on, one more time.
These are my reads.
Timing is off. Okay. And we wish Bob Lehman and his lash up down there at Grand Lake Stream, we wish them safety on the stream and best of luck chasing those salmon down there at GLS. A couple of quick things. As you know, Norm Plour just did a big, exciting fishing adventure up there in Quebec. And I guess you reported on it last week. Anything to add to that, Norm?
Well, if anybody's looking for a great place to go, quality fish, I mean, the biggest trout that was caught that outing was a 4-pounder. We had a number of them in the 2 3/4, 2 2.5.
Not too shabby.
The truite mouchetée, as they call it in Quebec.
Oh, wait, what do they call it again?
La truite mouchetée.
Say that one more time.
La truite mouchetée.
I'm going to have trouble with that.
Okay. Speckled trout. Easier to say it's speckled trout.
Speckled trout. Okay. Yeah. Well, you have to teach me how to say that later.
Gorgeous sunsets. Yeah. Accommodations are great. I mean, this is my fourth year, and I look forward to it every year.
Yeah. Okay. Diane and I went up to the Big Eddy, up to the West Branch for a few days. Bugs were brutal. I'm telling you, they were brutal up there, Ken. I've never seen anything like it. Just black flies would eat you up.
Yeah, I was up to camp up in Hersey this week, and they just... They drove me in.
They couldn't
stay outside to work at all.
Oh, yeah, they're awful. My face, you know, when you're trying to tie a fly on and you can't, you just ignore those bugs and they're all over you. And I got back and Diane said, look at your face. And I looked like I had Rocky Mountain spotted fever. I mean,
you had blood dripping off your chin.
Dripping off my face. But anyway, we had fun, right?
Oh, we did.
Yeah,
wonderful time.
That West Branch. You caught a couple of salmon and a trout.
Couple trout.
And then the second night, I caught a couple of salmon.
Yeah, we didn't.
You got skunked.
I did.
Yeah, that second night. Anyway, we had a good time.
A caller with an unrelated question.
A caller with an unrelated question. Do we accept calls with unrelated questions? I guess we do. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors. Okay. Our guest is Ken Winters. Go ahead.
There, Sandy.
Hi. I had a question. I lived on Deer Isle for the last 3 years, and I was told by one of the old timers down there that years back, coyotes were introduced down there to control the deer population. I was wondering if that could possibly be true.
I don't think so. I never heard that. And I'm almost a student of the whole coyote evolution, but I don't think so. I never heard of that. I don't think that happened. But if you get any proof, let me know, would you? But I don't think so. I'd say no.
If any proof, they'd probably make a lynch mob down there.
Yeah, right, they would, yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Anything else on your mind tonight? Are you a hunter?
Well, sometimes. I got a little story. I got a cousin. He's almost 100 years old now. And last year, he was up to the Forks, and I'm not sure which river he was on, but there's a rapids up there. And his grandson's got an airboat, and it's a place where you really can't get at to fish otherwise. And he held him right in the rapids with the airboat, and he hooked a 3-pound brookie.
All righty.
Pretty happy about that.
Yeah, well, airboats are a good way to go. Yeah. All right, we appreciate your call.
Yeah, buddy.
And thanks for listening. Okay. Again, our guest tonight is Ken Winters, who's an accomplished hunter of big game over 5 different continents, I believe. Right, Ken?
Yes, 5 continents. Right.
And we're going to interview Ken in detail here in just a minute. First, we have to dispose of an outdoor trivia question. If you have the right answer to Diane's question, she will mail you a copy of my book called Maine Angler's Logbook, worth about $17. What's the question, Diane?
African big game hunters like to go after the so-called Big Five, most of which are dangerous animals. Name at least 3 of these Big Five.
All right. You ponder that. 1-800-966-1039. We'll be back with Ken Winters right after this. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and our studio guest again is big game hunter Ken Winters. We're talking to Ken momentarily, but first we want an answer to the trivia question. If you have it, we'll make sure you get a copy of my book, Maine Angler's Logbook. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Ken Winters.
Yes, go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, what do you think the answer is?
Well, you're talking Maine big game or
no, African no. We're talking African, dangerous African big game, the Big Five, so-called.
Okay. Cape Buffalo.
That's one.
Lion.
Two.
Leopard.
No.
What's the third one?
Leopard.
Yeah, it is.
That is. Okay. Congratulations. You have won a copy of my book.
Thank you.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed writing it. What's your first name, sir?
Philip.
Philip. Okay. If you'll stay on the line, Philip, Norm will get your address, and Diane will mail you out a copy of the book first thing tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for listening. Take care. Yep, bye-bye. Okay, let's get down to business here with Ken Winters. Before we take any calls, I'd kind of like to set the stage a little bit here. You're a Bangor resident?
I'm from Waterville originally.
From Waterville originally.
Yeah.
You graduated of University of Maine.
Yeah.
And you were very successful in business.
Yes.
And you've been hunting all your life?
All my life, since I was a little...
Since
I was probably 12.
Have you really? Yeah. And obviously you took to it.
Yeah, I loved
it. Yeah, you did. Your book is called Chasing High Adventures, and it's written by you and your sidekick, Bob Marksworth, who did kind of a ghostwriting for you.
Yes.
I've read the book. It's just a wonderful repository of exciting stories. And I'm an avid hunter, but I would not want to do some of the things that you did, basically because I'm kind of a coward, and I wouldn't want to face what you faced. And we're going to save the best one for last, I guess, because I like to do that. What seized you to want to do this book?
Well, this fellow, Bob Marksworth, contacted me, and I didn't know who he was, and out of a clear blue, and he said, you're a member of Safari Club International, and as am I, and... I've been reading about you and some of the things that Safari Club has printed and thought that you had some stories that might make for an interesting book. And would you be interested in doing so? And he said, I write books for help people write books. That's what he does for a living. And he said, maybe it's something you can write for your family, for your children and so forth at your age. And I said, well, sure. So that's how it all started. Yeah. Something for my family.
Well, you've done it. And for those who may not know you, you have bagged 223 different big game species throughout the world in 5 continents, and you hold 103 world records in the world record book. That's quite an accomplishment, and you had a really exciting life, I would think.
Well, I've I've had a privileged life, actually. Yeah. I've been very fortunate, yeah. Yes.
And before we go any further, and before I fail to mention it, I want to thank you for your service to your country.
Yeah, well.
You were a Green Beret in Vietnam. Saw a lot of combat and action over there on the Laotian border, I guess, right, with the Laotian tribesmen?
Yes.
Yeah. And again, thank you for your service. We appreciate it. Back to the big game. As pointed out in your book, there are five species that are considered to be dangerous animals that you bagged: the lion, the rhino, the elephant, the hippo, and the Cape buffalo.
Yeah.
As well as a leopard, right?
Spotted
leopard.
Yeah, leopard is one of the big five, too.
I didn't have
that.
Okay. You want me to crank up his mic? Okay. I'm going to turn you up.
All right.
You're there. A little bit, Ken.
Okay.
Let me ask you, which of the big five was the most difficult or the most intimidating animal to pursue, and why?
Most intimidating would have been the elephant.
The elephant?
Yeah.
Because of its size?
The size and the temperament. I booked a hunt to hunt it was called a pack animal, PAC, problem animal control, mm-hmm. an elephant. And I did that in a place called the Gonoma Zoo, which is in the southern part of Zimbabwe.
Right.
That elephant, the government knew which animal it was because it had killed a couple of people already and it was a crop raider. So when these things happen like this, the government wants these animals taken care of. So they hire people like me to come over there. We'll pay a fee to hunt an animal to take care of a problem.
They want to get rid of.
They want to get rid of.
Yeah.
And so you do a lot of organization, planning with the government, the local government, mm-hmm. and with your professional hunter, the PH, they call it. And so that's how that happened.
So the elephant, by temperament, is an aggressive, mean-spirited animal?
It is. Well, they don't seem to be when you see them on some television programs.
Right, or at the circus,
but,
right.
But the problem with the elephant is, and I've studied them for a long time, yep. and had quite a few encounters with them, the elephant does not live in one homogeneous habitat. In some countries, there are too many of them. Some countries, they have some dangerous ones. Some countries, there's not enough. It all depends upon what country you're in or what part of that country in Africa.
I see.
So hunting elephant is a marvelous challenge, particularly when the natives live on a subsistence level. Mm-hmm. Let's face it. They don't have a lot of things.
Yeah.
So they plan – they have to live in their gardens. Well, in their gardens they plant maize, corn, they plant sorghum, which is another kind of a tall vegetable that grows, watermelons, pumpkins, all the kinds of things that we ourselves like here.
Yeah.
But they put them in the garden, and they have to live on that. And, of course, all those things attract the elephant. The elephant loves them all.
Oh, yeah.
And then of course, the elephant also is they get rogue, so these elephants that are called problem animal control elephants are really rogue animals. They've gone rogue, mm-hmm. and they have to be taken care of. If you don't kill them, if they can't find someone to pay a fee to come shoot them, the government shoots them.
I see.
Because they have to be
controlled. And the meat is edible. Of an
it's delicious.
So the natives probably enjoy the meat, right?
The every piece of the meat is consumed.
Is that true with every trophy animal that you've taken? The meat goes to a good cause?
Except the crocodile.
Except
I couldn't get anyone to eat the croc.
They won't eat a croc?
No, they're full of spirits.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of crocs are full of spirits, and they won't touch them.
Is that right?
They call it a flat dog.
Oh, yeah?
Flat dog.
That right?
Actually,
yeah.
Some of them do.
Yeah.
Yeah, shot a couple of them. And
Is it legal to, in some parts of Africa, can you still legally hunt elephant?
Oh, yeah.
You can, right?
Yeah, you can hunt it in lots of countries.
Oh, can you?
Hunt. Yeah.
And what happens to the ivory from an elephant today?
Well, interesting you should ask that. I have at home some ivory.
I saw pictures of them in your book.
Yeah, in the book, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the irony of the elephant is that of all the animals I had, all the big five, the only one that did not make the record book is the elephant.
The elephant,
only because you need 100 pounds of ivory to make the record book. And I have 97 and a half pounds. That was the two together.
That's like 199.5 yeah. pound buck, right?
Yeah, that's yeah. That's right.
So you still have those tusks.
I have the tusks. Yeah, yeah. Yeah and I'm thinking of what I'm probably going to do is I'm going to donate them to the state of Maine Museum if they're interested.
Oh, they would love to have that. Great. Yeah. That would be a nice gesture.
And I have the feet. You know, they make the feet stools out of the feet.
Yeah.
And the front feet, because the front feet of an African elephant are a lot bigger than the rear feet. Yeah.
And I imagine if an elephant steps into your little garden, it's going to raise havoc with your beets or your broccoli, right?
Well, they tear the garden up. Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Diana's whispering. You don't whisper on the show, Diana, because people at home can't hear you. Go ahead.
Well,
I
just wondered if, he had an encounter with an elephant.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did have, That's when I was. That was back in Zambia when I was hunting.
Yeah, that's the charge that overturned the vehicle.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Why don't we pursue that maybe after the break?
Okay.
Again, if you folks at home have a question for Ken, 1-800. What's the number, Di?
1-800-966-1039.
Okay, and in this book they cover. The cover refers to five near-death adventures. Mm. One of them was when you were parachuting into the Bosnian conflict as a member of the Airborne, 82nd Airborne?
Yeah, I was in Special Forces.
Special Forces.
Yeah.
And you were shot at while you were descending in your parachute.
That's correct, yeah.
Wow, that must have been a hair-raising experience, to say the least.
This book has a couple stories in there about that because it really happened. But I really choose not. I don't think much about the military. I don't talk about it. I don't even want to remember it.
Okay. I don't blame you.
I try not to think of that.
All right, good. Well, we'll concentrate on big game. We have about a minute left. I wanted to – a couple of things we're going to cover. This will be food for thought for you folks at home if you have questions for Ken. Some of the things I'd like to cover with Ken include we want to talk about some of the big game guns that were used in his hunting over there, and they pointed out in the book, and you had various calibers, and I'd like to discuss some of those right after the break. Anyway, you stay with us. We'll be back with more with Ken Winters right here on Maine Outdoors. Okay, we're back again here on Maine Outdoors, and again, if you joined us late, our guest is Ken Winters. Ken is... from Waterville, Maine, he was a very successful businessman, and he also was an extremely successful big game hunter, which is his passion, during his lifetime, and he bagged five of the dangerous big game, the big five, in Africa. And he also hunted not just Africa, but everywhere, North America, Argentina, New Zealand, and even the North Pole area, mm-hmm. the Arctic. And if you have any questions for him, we encourage you to call with your questions. At what number, Di?
1-800-966-1039.
Okay, I think for those at home who may not be aware or have read your book, the chronology of this, I think, is significant because it was a crucial, pivotal time in your life. You went to Africa for your first hunt of the first of five dangerous big game, and it happened to be a Cape buffalo. And something pretty bad happened during the Cape buffalo hunt. Would you tell our listeners about that, Ken?
Yeah. Well, I was I'd already taken the Cape buffalo, and I was in a place called the Kafue River in Zambia, and doing all the things that you do, fishing and so forth, and having a good, good time. And it came to toward the end of my the hunt, and on board was a buffalo on the back of the hunting vehicle. Mm-hmm. We're headed back to camp. Along the way, there was a little cute little elephant standing there off the side of the road. Right. I thought I'd stop and take a picture, so I asked us to stop and take a picture, and I'm taking pictures of this thing. And all of a sudden, the PH, professional hunter, says, come back, get in the vehicle, quick, never stop taking the pictures. So I did. And just as soon as my rear end hit that seat, the lights went out, and an elephant came out of the bush, the mother, turned the truck over on us, and I was under the truck. the trackers and the professional hunter were on the the only British side of the track.
Yeah.
So they saw it coming. They heard it and they jumped off. I didn't see it. Truck turned over on me and they left me for dead. I was left there for quite some time. They thought I was dead. Mm-hmm. Little guy comes back, one of the trackers comes back to check on the truck. Not me. They didn't care about me. They thought I was gone.
Yeah.
Checked, and they saw me twitch. So they figured I must be alive. So they finally got back. They got the truck off me, apparently. I don't remember any. This is how I'm told.
Yeah, you're unconscious, yeah.
For 3 days. Or
and I was in a coma for three or 4 days. I was in a coma, they said. And I woke up in a hospital in the town of Lusaka, which is the capital of Zambia.
Right.
In the Continental Hotel, and I looked around, and I saw that was the doctor was white, the nurses were black, because you're in Zambia,
right?
And I had no idea what was going on. And they said, "Well, you've been in a coma for 3 days. We got to get you out of here." And said, "You're alive. You're lucky. You're alive." So they got me they got me an aircraft. I had bought this service, by the way. You always want to do that when you go on big African hunts.
Yeah.
This service, the
medical
airlift alert.
Or whatever, yeah.
And they extracted me and sent me to, Johannesburg. They got me stabilized in the hospital, and then they sent me back to home to Bangor, Maine.
All right. And there's more to that story, but our callers are backing up. And let's take a call. Good evening, caller number one. You're on Maine Outdoors with Ken Winters. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Sue.
Hi. Thank you for your service to this country. I really appreciate it. All my family members have served, and it's wonderful. I have a question for you. Do you ever get pushback by the the Federation or PETA or any people like that? On hunting elephants or big game. I think it's wonderful that they are taken care of when they need to be taken care of. I'm not against that at all. But mm-hmm. I was just wondering if you get pushback from those people. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you. And thank you again for serving our country.
Thank you, Sue.
Okay. Well, you're welcome. I'd say my pleasure, but it was my duty.
No, yeah.
But I did it, and I'm proud to have done it. The PETA people... I think there's a concept we have to understand. In Africa, if you want to preserve an animal, you need to put a price on its head. Because if you don't put a price on its head, which means if you don't allow that to be hunted and people to pay a fee to hunt the animal, the natives will kill it and it'll become extinct.
That's great. Counterintuitive, but that's great.
Exactly the way it is.
Yeah.
So the reason that you hunt elephant really is to preserve them.
Yeah.
So you shoot a few elephants so that the many may live.
That's great.
That's the way it's done.
Yeah, I like that.
And it's true for other animals. It's true for lions. It's true for all the different animals.
And I wonder if the people at PETA, the other anti-hunting groups, understand that or want to understand.
They don't want to understand. They could if they wanted to, but they don't want to do that.
Are you still there, Sue?
No, she hung up.
She's gone. We have another caller back.
Sandra from Castine.
Okay, Sandra from Castine. You're on Maine Outdoors with Ken Winters. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm an alternate on my husband's moose permit in Zone 2.
Yeah.
And I find a 30-06 is a little bit heavy. I was wondering if you had a gun you would recommend for a female.
You think it's too heavy?
Yeah, maybe the stock is long.
Well, I think a 30-06 is a very good caliber to use for moose. You won't be undergunned, or you won't be overgunned, actually.
Okay, I found when I tried to hunt with it before that I had to have a stick to hold it up.
Well, that's not a bad idea. Whenever you can hunt from a supported position, it's always better than hunting free hand.
You bet.
No, always is. And I would say keep the 06 or something like that. 270 would do it, but... I think, and that's not much difference. So I think a 30-06 is a pretty good round to use.
Okay, Sandra, my wife has had an experience bagging a moose, and she now has a tag for another one, and she has a caliber rifle that she used, and it was very effective on her moose. Maybe she'd like to share
that. At 100 yards.
Go ahead.
Yeah, 35
Remington.
Oh, it's the one up 35 Remington is one of the old wonderful standbys.
Yeah, good brush gun.
Very
all
good
all
brush
I hunt
gun.
With. Yeah,
I have one and I love
available
it.
Available today.
You can buy a get a Marlin 35 Remington and put a scope on it and you're good to go.
Yes.
Would you agree, Ken?
Absolutely.
7mm.
Yeah.
My wife also has a 7mm 08, which is a
good deer gun.
It's a user-friendly gun, and she's killed an elk with it, and it's very effective, Ken, even though
yeah,
it's
I have one of them as well.
Oh, do you?
I like that. I like that for deer.
So I'd go with either maybe a 7mm 08 or a 35 Remington. I don't think you could go wrong.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some moose guides out there who are going to differ with us, and we invite them to call in.
Yeah, you don't need a huge caliber for a moose.
No,
what you need is a good shot.
My husband's a guide.
Ah,
your husband what?
Is a guide.
Oh, he's a guide.
He's a hunting guide, and I'm a fishing guide. So, there you go.
Well, what'd your husband tell you?
He said to call.
Oh, he said to call. Oh, okay. All right.
It's always interesting to get a lot of opinions.
Yeah. Well, you know, nobody is more authoritative on this issue than the gentleman sitting across from us here as our studio guest, and he made a wonderful point, which really boils it all down. Shot placement is everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really. You know, when it all boiled down. Yeah. Well, congratulations to you, and good luck on your hunt, and I hope you find the right caliber.
Well, same to it. Same to your wife. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra.
Yeah. Right, bye.
Yeah. Okay, good questions we've got going here on the show. Ken, after the chronology was after the act, we have another call?
Yes.
Well, let's take it. Don't want to keep those folks waiting. Yeah, good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Ken Winters.
Caleb from Greenville.
Go ahead, Taylor.
Hey, how Caleb. You doing?
Fine, sir.
Hey, I just wanted to thank Mr. Winter for his service. And I just wanted to say, you know, with your the elephant, turn your Jeep over. I can't tell you how many times up on the Piscataquis River I've had that happen to me. I'm just joking, obviously.
But I wondered for a minute there.
Turned over by a moose.
Yeah.
It's a great show, and Mr. Winter, thank you so much for your service.
Yeah.
There you will. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Appreciate your call. Goodbye. Thank you. Anyway, we were talking about this fact. You had this accident, and you were really broken up pretty badly, and there was a long period for you to get better, right?
Yeah, it took several years, actually.
Several years.
Yeah, I have two artificial shoulders, total replacements.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have a hole in my side which hasn't been repaired, and an artificial foot. Which is the reason I use a cane.
Okay. But in spite of this, you went back to Africa.
Oh, yeah.
Go back?
Many times.
Yes. I've been back.
After the accident.
After the accident, probably 20 times.
Have you really, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's
you love the place.
Oh, yeah. I've lived there for, I even taught there for a semester at a university.
Yeah, I read that in your book.
Yeah, yeah.
So you didn't let it slow you down. You went back and bagged the other four dangerous big game species.
Mm-hmm. Plus.
And what was the next one after the Cape Buffalo, after you recovered?
I think that was the leopard.
That was the spotted leopard?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, it was a leopard hunt. I did that in Zimbabwe as well. It was a 15-day hunt. And for the first 12 nights, I never slept indoors. I always slept outside because I was on I was living out in the under the stars, because this takes a little time, but I'm giving you an example. The leopard hunt was strange because you're living with an animal; they could kill you anytime they want to. Mm-hmm. So we had a situation where we had a shooting blind set up. In the blind is my rifle already loaded and wired in place. We spend the night. You only hunt at night when you're doing this, and you're up in the you're about 200 yards away, 150, 200 yards. You set up a camping area.
So you're sleeping not too far from the blind.
Oh yeah,
I'm not sleeping.
You're sleeping.
Yeah.
You're trying to sleep. It's a staging area.
Yeah.
So you're in a state. You're guarded all night by. At each end of the staging area, there's a a tracker, black tracker, with a shotgun. I always carry a handgun with me loaded all the time because the animals are right there, right? You're living amongst the animals. You travel down. You can't use your – it's strange. You actually have the ground's all prepared. There's no pebbles or anything, no rocks or anything like that. You walk in your stocking feet. You don't wear shoes. You have your stocking feet, so you don't make any noise. There's no flashlights. So the reason we went to and did it when we did is because of the atmospheric conditions were perfect. Mm-hmm. It was a high moon, and so you put rocks along the way, and you put pieces of toilet paper, and the sun, the moon shining off the toilet paper is your guide. That's what you follow that down to your place. Mm-hmm. You get down there, and you get into the place. And as your body shoulder touches that rifle, you know it's ready to go. It's all loaded.
Yeah.
But it's pointed exactly where you want, where the bait is.
Oh, okay.
So, and then the PH says, okay, he counts to three silently with you. And on the count of three, he puts the light on, and you either shoot or you don't. You get like 2 seconds to shoot. And if you don't, it's not there, you don't shoot. If it's there, you pull the trigger.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. And that's how you do it.
Yeah.
And that's a very unusual way, but that's – and I got a big one.
Yeah. Well, Norm Plord knows about that from his period up in the county. They call it jacking up there.
That's right.
Just kidding, Norm. No. Just kidding. That's a great story.
I know people who did.
Yeah. We have a thing here, Ken. We hate to interrupt, but we have to make a buck for the station.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll do that real quick, and then we'll get back with our stories. And again, if you want to call Ken and ask him anything, the number, Diane, is what?
1-800-966-1039.
Okay, I want to remind you again, as we do every week, that this program is sponsored in part not only by Northwood Sporting Journal, but also by, a whole bunch of great sponsors. But one of them is General Appliance and Brewer. And as we tell you every week, that's a great place to go for used and new appliances, either gas or propane. But I have a testimonial I want to share with you real quickly. I was up to a remote cabin up in at a remote place in Maine. It actually belongs to a fellow who's listening tonight, Mr. Hasty up there at Sebois Lake.
Hi, Ron.
And hey, you're not supposed to do that. Anyway, say hi to Ron and his lash up there. But we hope you're enjoying the program. And anyway, I went up to fix Ron's or get Ron's propane fridge started because he couldn't get the thing to touch off. So I went up there the other day and played around with it and had some problems there getting the thing going. But I finally did. And the great thing about this is this was bought at Elkins, L. Elkins' place, a General Appliance. And now Ron said in the beginning, he said, well, gee whiz, I hear on the program every week that he'll travel anywhere in Maine to fix a propane appliance. And that's not the case. You have to know that Al will travel 10 or 15 miles, but he's not going to drive 100 miles up to Pompheel or Daquam to fix your propane refrigerator. Isn't that right, Scotty Bates?
Well, yes, but
huh?
He'll still get you going.
Yeah, he'll get you going, but you do it by
the phone.
I called Al on the iPhone, and he walked me through this and helped me fix this thing, and I was able to get it running again. So Ron and his crew are up there, and they actually have ice cubes this week,
I'm
sure they appreciate. Anyway, we tip of the hat and kudos to Al Elkin and General Appliance and Brewer. Unlike the big box stores, can you imagine if I'd called one of the big box stores to have them explain to me how to fix a propane fridge?
Right, they'd say, what?
Well, they say, what? No. So anyway, if you like service, people who stand behind their products, do business with General Appliance and Brewer, Al Elkins. He's the guy to talk with. And thanks again, Al, for all your help. We really appreciate it. Okay, back to our guest. Again, 1-800-966-1039 if you want to ask Ken a question. So we got through the Cape Buffalo and the leopard. And there were a number of other critters that were taken. Mm-hmm. The rhino is a dangerous animal, too, as well, mm-hmm. Right?
Yes, it is, yeah.
How did your rhino hunt go?
I chose to dart the rhino, which still counts for having taken. But I didn't see any reason I wanted to kill a rhino.
Yeah?
So it was a white rhino. There were black rhinos and white rhinos.
Okay.
The black one can be hunted in a very limited amount. The white rhino was a big comeback success story.
Oh, I see. Okay.
They brought it back.
Yeah.
And they're mostly in South Africa. And the white rhino is, They're the second largest land animal in the world. Mm-hmm. And they were around 6,000 pounds.
Wow.
They were around 3,000 or 4,000 pounds.
Do the natives eat the rhino meat?
Yes, they do.
They do.
They do.
Yeah.
But I didn't really want to kill it. I wanted to shoot it. And plus, to kill it would cost about $35,000. To dart it cost about $6,000. There wasn't a big question on which way I was going to go.
Okay. I can appreciate that. I would definitely have gone for the darting. We have another caller, right?
Yes, we do. Mike from Holland.
Okay, Mike, you're on Main Outdoors with Ken Winters. Go ahead.
Good evening. I've got three questions for Mr. Winters. One of them is, over the years, I've read some real fascinating stories about man-eating animals, especially tigers. And I was wondering if you'd ever been involved in hunting one of those down. And I want to know if you'd ever fired a 700 nitro. And then my last question is, I believe I read in a paper where some of his mounts are being sold off. And I just wondered what he had to say, and I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, right. Excellent questions. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Mike. Go ahead, Ken.
Well, let's talk about a 700. I've never fired a 700.
Yeah.
I've fired the gun I use mostly for elephant is a 470 Nitro Express.
Yeah.
It's made by Kruger.
Yeah.
And it's a double barrel shotgun. It's like a double barrel shotgun, but it's a double barrel rifle.
Side by side.
Yeah. And that's because you want two aim shots as quickly as you can get them.
Yeah.
And it's actually a bit quicker than a bolt.
And that must result in a bruised shoulder, I would imagine, right?
Well, you have to learn learn how to shoot it.
Yeah.
And you rock with it. You don't put anything behind you.
Right.
You rock with it.
So there's a knack.
You lean into it, and you allow yourself to go back with it.
Oh, no kidding.
And that's the way you do it.
Oh, you don't hold it that tight then.
No, you don't. You hold tight, but you don't hold it
too tight.
Allow yourself.
Is that something you learn through trial and error?
Trial and error more than anything.
Wow.
Yeah. And you need to practice with that.
Okay. What was his third question? Do you remember?
Yes, he had other questions.
He was talking about your mounts. He saw they were for sale.
Yeah, well, I've sold some of the mounts.
Yeah,
and the reason is because I'm about 80.
Yeah,
and I'm living in an assisted living area.
Right,
I don't have the same physical abilities I had before, and I have no place to put them.
Yeah,
I've given a lot away. I've sold some. I've given a lot away. You can't really shoot. You can't really sell ivory, since the days that I shot mine. If it's illegally taken,
but you can't sell it. Sell the ivory?
No, it's because of federal laws.
Yeah,
CITES permits and all that are required, and even beyond that, the laws are difficult. And you can't shoot. You can't sell a leopard except within your own state where it's licensed, where you are licensed.
Yeah.
So I've shot a couple leopards. I've shot sick Cape Buffalo over the years. I love to shoot Cape Buffalo.
Have you really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. So anyway, I think that answers Mike's questions. For those who don't know, I wrote an article about you a number of years ago. I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago, and ran some photos in the Sporting Journal. You had a tremendous trophy room at your home.
Yes,
I remember that.
I did.
And it was just a wonderful collection of trophies. Any other callers stacked up there? Okay. Before we run out of time, Ken, I just want to ask you a couple of other questions here. We're talking again about the Nitro Express. Was there any go-to gun that you like to use for your hunts in Africa?
The number one caliber I would use would be a 375 H&H. 375 H&H, Holland. It's probably the most popular. Worldwide, it's probably the most popular caliber there is that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
You can shoot an elephant with it. You can shoot a duiker. A duiker is a little thing, maybe weighs 15, 20 pounds.
Yeah, doesn't blow it all to pieces.
But you use solids.
I see.
If you use solids in the 375 H&H, it's just like a little hole goes through and that's it. So it's not a little hole. It's the .30 caliber.
That's
35.
Is that a 37 caliber?
35.
About a 35 caliber.
35 caliber.
Yeah, 35
caliber. Like kind of like a 35 Whalen, a little bit.
Yeah, except it's about three times more.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a lot more than the Whalen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the velocity of a cartridge like that?
You're going to do close to 28, 2,800 feet per second.
Yeah, wow.
A 300 grain bullet.
Yeah. So that was your favorite.
That's my number one favorite of all.
Yeah, yeah. And just I'm just speculating. You must have had a very impressive collection of firearms.
Oh, I did. I had probably 60, 70 rifles.
Did you really?
Yeah. I sold a lot of them through jewelers.
So you sold a lot of your firearms?
Yeah, through Julius's.
Yeah.
They used to be in Lincoln, Clinton, in Fairfield.
Julius.
Oh, yeah.
Julius.
I heard that, yeah. All right. Looking back on your career as a big game hunter, we have about 3 minutes left here. I would just want to ask you, is there anything that you would have done differently in your big game hunting career?
I really don't think so. I think I've... You know, I'm pleased with what
pleased
I was able to get
did.
Able to accomplish.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was probably spent more time fishing if I could have done anything.
Oh,
I love to fish on the Zambezi River.
Yeah.
And, you know, catching tiger fish and things like that. And barbel and, you know.
Yeah. Did you have any questions for Ken?
No, but maybe Ken has some more that he'd like to.
Sure. Anything we haven't touched upon that you'd like to cover?
Well, no.
Share.
I'm thinking. No, it's.
Well, I have another question here on my little list here.
Oh, okay.
We're talking a little bit about the fact that of all these animals, the meat goes to good use. It's used by the locals for consumption.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a chance to taste any of this wild meat? And if you did, was there any type that you found particularly flavorful that you really liked?
Yes, I think probably the kudu is very, very good. They make sausage called vos out of it.
Uh-huh.
Kudu vos is a very popular one. Kudu is very good. Eland is excellent. Of course, in the restaurants in Europe, you can buy a springbuck anywhere because springbuck. I used to go out and shoot 10 or 15 springbuck, because what they would do. Is they collect them and they sell them in the marketplace in Europe.
I see. We have a caller. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Ken Winters.
Hi, Ken. I just I heard your voice on the radio, and I was glad to hear that you're doing all right. I used to run a few car washes. You might remember me for Weber Oil.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I'm glad to hear you're still... writing. I got to visit your place a couple of times and was very impressed with it, and always find your stories interesting.
Well, thank you. Yes, I know who you are, and appreciate the call.
Well, thank you, Ken, and you take care. Be well.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. We have just a short time left. If somebody wants to get a copy of your book called Chasing High Adventure. How do they do that, Ken?
Okay. Well, I'm going to have a book signing, and it's going to be for sale up at the Old Town Trading Post.
September 14th.
September 14th.
Old Town Trading Post.
And I'm going to be there with you.
Yes, you
are. Elbow to elbow, and looking forward to sharing the book signing adventure with you up there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well with you.
All right. And again, it's a wonderful book. Diane has read some of it. I've read all of it and just enjoyed it immensely. The one of the exciting chapters we never even got to, and that was your encounter with the lion. Do we have time for that? Are we out of time, engineer?
Got about 20 seconds.
Oh, we don't have time. We'll have to have you back, Ken.
Okay. Well,
we will have you back.
I'll be pleased to come
on. We will look forward to having you back on the show and talk guns and hunting. I just love to share that.
Okay.
Have you share that with us. Our guest next week, we're still working on, I think it's going to be Matt LaRoche from the Allagash Waterway, but I haven't firmed it up yet, but I'm working on him. And we thank you for being here again, Ken.
Thank you.
And again, thanks you for your service to your country. And we'll see you all next week, won't we? Right here on Maine Outdoors.